Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on debt when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, your federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, how industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for anyway? Knowing how this information is gathered and knowing what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, send us an email. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Debt. Everybody has debt. Well, it seems that nearly everybody has debt. Let's take a look at debt and 1,000 ways that you can waste your money by the Consumer Education Department of the General Delivery University. You know, Americans occupy their existence doing four things. They're, number one, seeking more money. Or two, they're seeking to make themselves more sexually attractive. Or three, they're sleeping. Or four, they're spending money. Vast amounts of advice and counsel are currently available on how to get more money, get more sex, get better sleep, and spend your money wisely. But there is a very serious gap in the information spectrum, and it exists regarding how you waste money. Now, while most people utilize serious research, rumor, blind luck, and professional consumer guides to assist them in the purchases of food, clothing, and entertainment, their cars, home appliances, electronic equipment, real estate, and travel, there's always the lurking feeling in the back of our minds that we fail to spend our money wisely. Eventually, we all come to the realization, professional consumer experts deduce rather quickly, that there is ultimately no way that we can avoid being had, being made a fool of, being wastrels. Inevitably, a great portion of what we spend will be frivolously or inefficiently squandered, and the goods that we buy turn out to be just plain garbage. Now, given that a great portion of our income will be effectively wasted, and also given that we secretly desire to be good and smart about what we do, it seems only appropriate that a guide be created to assist the consumer in assuring himself that we will not get the best value for our money, and that we should be secure in the knowledge that we've deliberately wasted our money. Therefore, weeks of research have been dedicated to the preparation of this how-to guide to assist the American consumer in the various and many ways of throwing away his or her money. And we can absolutely guarantee that if you utilize this guide to assist you in purchasing goods or services, you will always be had. But unlike your fellow consumers, you will waste your money with your eyes wide open. You will be comforted, though, with the knowledge that in some detail as to how and why you have wasted your money. We do not, however, offer you any money-back guarantee. So let's start with buying a new car. The surest way to waste money is to purchase a new car. And while you're purchasing the new car, you should pay the full sticker price on the window. And if there is no sticker price on the window, then demand that the dealer create one. And be sure to ask him to include the charges for the dealer's preparation, undercoating, destination charges, and a 1% add-on for his advertising budget. Often the car dealer will confront you with the choice of an extremely low and attractive interest rate, or a very high and outrageous interest rate, together with a sizable cash rebate for a free trip to Disneyland. In order to eliminate any confusion, you should ask the dealer to compute which alternative will cost you the most, which one will be the most wasteful and least efficient for you, and the most profitable and beneficial for the dealer. A very reliable way to waste money buying a new car is to purchase that new car in a parking lot at night, with a high degree of probability the car will turn out to be stolen, and you will lose the car, all of the money that you spent on it, and have to hire a lawyer to keep you from going to jail for buying stolen property. Now, if the price of this car is too good to be true, it probably is. But such a deal has a virtual certainty of being an enormous waste of money. Second, buying a used car. The act of purchasing a used car is one of the most refreshing and above-board transactions that anyone can participate in if they're seeking to waste their money. It is exceptionally rare for anyone to purchase a used car and then not discover that they've been taken to the cleaners. The purchase of a used car is often one's first venture into the world of wasting money, accomplished by most while still in high school. It's not uncommon for one to lose their virginity as a smart consumer this way, years before analogous transactions. Rarely does one come away from this experience of buying their first used car without feeling unclean, used, and foolish. There are sure signs of a potential expert in the throwing away of money as a lifetime avocation from just one used car transaction. To ensure your complete and total humiliation and a loss of self and net esteem, along with your net worth, is maximized while buying a used car. Always buy your car from a man who speaks with a southern accent and who wears a white belt and white shoes. You can never go wrong in throwing away your money when dealing with such an individual. And always compare the mileage of the car with its condition. The more of a discrepancy that you see between the mileage and the condition of the car is the better. So a car that shows less than 20,000 miles on its odometer, with all of the rubber worn off of its gas pedal, dents everywhere, worn seat covers, and inspection stickers from at least 10 states on its windows, is a sure buy. This car probably has more mileage on it than a round trip to the moon. But you'll pay a premium price for the claim of low mileage. Then face enormous repair bills from the moment you drive it off the lot until it meets its final reward in a junkyard, sometimes as quickly as before the ink dries on the title transfer form. Now, if you cannot find a low mileage opportunity like this, then look for a car with different color paint showing from beneath its scratches. These are fantastic buys, especially if the true color of the car was red or yellow and there are faint outlines where the words taxi or fire department used to be. And always purchase your used car with cash. Never buy a used car unless it is guaranteed to be as is with no warranties, expressed or implied. And this is only warranty, or this is the only warranty that a wasteful consumer should be concerned with. If you feel compelled to purchase a warranty, only pay extra for the warranty if the car dealer's offices are in a trailer, which still has its wheels on it, and whose business sign is hand-painted on cardboard. Finally, if you cannot afford to buy your used car with cash, look for a dealer who carries his own financing. This assures you that you will pay what used to be a usurious rate of interest for your car loan. This sort of financing always has the condition that if you are a few minutes late on your weekly car payments, they will instantly repossess the vehicle and sell it again and again and again and again. Now, in addition to this experience, we now have repairing your car. It is very difficult to have your car repaired and not spend at least 40% more than you really need to. Thus, it is difficult to exceed the average amount of money wasted by consumers in car repairs. But there are a number of proven methods to up your percentage of wasted money over the national norm. First of all, you should insist that the mechanic not call you to tell you what he's found wrong with your car before proceeding to fix it. Second, give the repair shop blanket authority to fix whatever is broke on your car. Third, tell the mechanic money is no object in making your car safe to drive for you and your family. Fourth, be as vague as you can about what you think is wrong with the car. Telling your mechanic that it makes a funny sound or it just doesn't feel right gives the mechanic more latitude to run up several hundred dollars worth of charges just locating what's broken or what he thinks may be broken. One popular way to waste money on car repairs is to patronize a repair shop where the owners and employees do not speak your language. And another sure bet is to have your car repaired only at gas stations located along major freeways and interstate highways, especially if you have out-of-state plates on your car. And then there is ChargeIt. ChargeIt. It's a universally accepted way to waste money, and it is to purchase everything you need or desire on a credit card. Then only pay the minimum monthly amount required by the charge card company. Most major credit cards charge between 15 to 30% interest on the unpaid balance that you have charged, and you can end up paying an astounding amount of interest over a year for very modest purchases, sometimes with the interest costs exceeding the original amount of the purchase. And a true spendthrift will use credit cards to buy quickly consumed items, such as food, drink, and magazines, and then end up paying $3 of interest for every $1 of actual purchase being made. Running out of charging limits is no problem, thanks to bank deregulation. Always make your monthly minimum payment that is due on time, and not only will that company constantly increase your credit line, but it will sell your name to other companies who will send you unsolicited new credit cards with new credit lines to charge against. And then there's the brand name versus generic. If you really want to waste money, always buy brand name goods as opposed to generic brand goods. If you're really serious about wasting money, that is. Now, frequently, the only differences between a brand name item and the cheaper generic product are the packages that they come in and the size of their advertising budget. So when you buy a brand name, you're telling the company you like the artwork, you like the quality of the printing, you like the color, and you like the type of container that the product comes in. And you love their snappy television and magazine commercials. This will ensure the brand name company will continue to strive to make their packages even more attractive and continue to increase their advertising budget. So consider what America would be without advertising. America would be a bleak, dull, sterile landscape of woods and plains without billboards. Freedom of the press would cease because there would be no advertising to support our magazines and newspapers. Network television would go off the air. Radio would be silent. Millions would be unemployed. So keep America strong and prosperous, and buy brand name products. You aren't buying the product, you're buying a piece of the American dream itself. Buying brand name products is the Patriot's way to waste money. After all, wasting money is the American way. And buy by mail, by all means. Many consumers opt to purchase goods by mail, and with the advent of consumer protection laws, it is increasingly difficult to guarantee a waste of money in this activity without some serious effort and direction. However, a sufficient number of mail order opportunities are still outright frauds, if you can find but one of them. One reliable way to waste money in mail order purchasing is to buy a college diploma. General Delivery University is widely reputed for its fill-in-the-blank college degrees that it sells for $19.95 by mail. Another approach to mail order buying is to overcome your resistance to television ads that are common on independent stations and cable channels. You should keep pen and paper next to your television set so that whenever a chance to buy a once-in-a-lifetime collection of the greatest hits of the Botswana Symphony Orchestra of South Africa or a new kitchen knife that cuts through redwood trees is offered, you can get the toll-free number to call and order the item. And also, have your credit cards handy so that you can give that company your credit card number as well. And then there are telephone sales. Those in the know say telephone sales are an excellent opportunity for you to waste your money. All you have to do is say yes over and over again. Yes, yes, yes. And vast quantities of your wealth will vanish into dancing lessons, solar collection devices, life insurance, exercise equipment, and real estate in resort areas such as Manitoba or Saskatchewan, Canada. But only in stories or with carpet on the floor. When you go into a store with carpet on the floor, you can be guaranteed the same watch will cost twice as much if bought in a jewelry store with carpet on the floor as opposed to the watch bought in a store with linoleum tile on the floor. The more plush the surroundings in the store, the more the goods will cost. So by all means, look for the plushiest store that you can find. And the same holds true for fancy addresses. A Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue, or Rodeo Drive address ensures the maximum prices on the product. And never read the contract. Frequently, a contract must be signed before your purchase is completed. You will be handled and you will be handed a multi-page document with tiny little print on it and asked if you'd like to read it. You have 2 minutes to read 250,000 words of legalese drafted by an expensive Wall Street law firm. Don't bother, though. Just sign it. Of course, if you decide you want to get out of the contract, you won't be able to because the courts will assume that you knew what you were doing when you signed the contract, no matter what you claim to the contrary. If you want to find out whether or not it does any good to read a contract, just pretend that you've read it. Then demand paragraph 16 be deleted. No company will ever agree to change one letter of their contract, let alone delete an entire paragraph from their printed form. You either accept the contract as it is, or you don't buy, period. End of report. Lawyers have a term for this type of document. It's called an adhesion contract, because they are the means to stick it to you. Then there's long-distance telephone service. The deregulation of the nation's telephone system has created a bewildering array of opportunities for you to waste your money. The first step in wasting more of your money is to obtain your long-distance calling service from a competitor of AT&T. This will, in combination with similar decisions by many other customers, drive your local telephone utility into bankruptcy, and then prompt, vastly higher residential phone rates will follow, for which you have no competitive choices. Then use your new long-distance service. Most such services start charging you the instant the phone starts ringing at the other end. Typically, the phone will be answered, and you will instantly be put on hold. And if you're lucky, you'll get to listen to some music. Then, you'll get to ask if Jones is in, get put back on hold, get Jones' secretary, get put back on hold, and then finally told Jones is out of town, all of this taking 5 minutes. Many times the phone will ring for what seems like hours because the people you're calling are busy. If, in theory, you pay less per increment of time, but in practice the billable length of the call is longer. And if possible, always use 900 prefix numbers. And then there's sales. Sales are opportunities to save money, and thus should be avoided. They should be avoided with few possible exceptions. A store with a perpetual sale in process is in reality probably marking up their goods astronomically high. Then they discounted these inflated prices to about 110% of true retail. A sale, which alleges an $89 value for only $69, is a possibility because the use of the word value means the product might be worth that amount but isn't necessarily ever sold for that price. It just seems like a bargain when in fact the product may routinely be sold for $59 in the same community at a different store. Some stores with otherwise good names and high prices often have sales which would lead the consumer to believe that the usual high-quality products in the store are being discounted. This isn't necessarily true. Some stores make special purchases of cheaply made stuff from Taiwan to put on sale amidst their otherwise fine merchandise. This is the tactic called bait and switch used by such fine institutions as Walmart. And you should always fly first class. Once upon a time, flying first class on a domestic airline was a singularly pleasurable experience and well worth the substantial extra charge for the flight. But with the advent of airline deregulation and plummeting airline company profits, which is quickly followed by plummeting airline companies flying into bankruptcy or the ground, the value received for a first-class ticket has become indistinguishable from flying coach. But since first-class seats still cost at least 20% more than a seat a few feet further back in the cabin, flying first class has become a truly reliable way to waste money. And general rule, any enterprise that has been deregulated from government control is a good bet to be a potential opportunity for you to waste money. In the name of protecting consumers, government has thrown consumers to the wolves, stripping them of quality protection and price regulation benefits in order to cut the cost of government and allow those saved tax revenues to be spent on toilet seats for aircraft carriers at $650 per seat. Now, boys and girls, that may sound trite and trivial, but I wanted to begin the story of debt with some truth. And boy, if that ain't the truth, what is? Now let's think about this again, because people buy new cars every day. People buy used cars. They use credit cards. And they create debt. And Americans have created debt way beyond their capacity or ability to pay. The national government, for instance, has led the way by creating a national debt that is far beyond the ability or capacity of that government to pay that debt off. It is now impossible to pay the debt. Not impossible yet to service the debt, but it's impossible to pay it off. And shortly, it's coming to the point where the debt will be to the point where it won't be serviceable either. Americans are in debt up to their eyeballs. We buy houses that are too big, too costly, and we're unable to service the debt if anything goes wrong. Now, I'm going to show you what some of the debt problems are, and we're going to explode a myth, and that is that America is the wealthiest nation on earth. Excuse me. Boys and girls, since when is debt wealth? It is true that Americans have the highest standard of living in the world, that we buy more Starbucks coffee than anybody in the world, and we pay more for it. We would rather pay $3 for a Starbucks latte than 99 cents for a 7-Eleven cup of coffee, and I don't deny that. And hell, it may even be that the Starbucks tastes better. But it used to be in America that in the morning when we started the day, we went to Winchell's, had a couple of donuts and a cup of coffee, and sat down over a napkin and figured out what the day's routine was going to be. Today, it's not quite that way. And Americans are living beyond their means. Not only are we living beyond our means, we're living so far beyond our means that it would be hilarious if it weren't so serious. And the seriousness of this debt binge is going to come home to roost. It always does. And it always has unpleasant aftertaste. Unpleasant aftertaste. So I thought we'd take off by using a little humor to get you started on the way to extracting yourself from debt. Now, the middle class here in America is living on the edge. On the edge of insolvency. Bankruptcies are at an all-time high here in America, and I would suspect that probably in your country, in Australia or Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever you're living in the world, you probably are living beyond your means, and you probably are seeing bankruptcies at an all-time high, because this thing of debt, this thing of consumerism, this thing of a world economy, and we got to have more now, isn't just endemic in the United States, it's worldwide. And it didn't come upon us just recently or accidentally. It is a contrived It is an intentional motivation on the part of those in control to bury the population of the world in debt and to create a consumer society of feudal serfs indebted in slavery for the rest of their lives. It's not an accident. It's being done on purpose. But before we get to that, let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order one, call the law school at 417-273-4967. Remember, they're free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements are recommendations that we give. Do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, or they may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. But the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now for that 1,000 Ways to Waste Your Money article, go to www.bandersnatch.com. That's an odd name. BANDERSNATCH.com. All right, we'll tuck that one over here on the pile. And then let's take a look at the middle class in America living on the edge. Could your family absorb the financial strain of a job loss or a medical emergency? Well, a Democrat-funded think tank says most families' economic risks are growing. Now, the middle class today is less prepared for an economic emergency. An emergency, such as losing your job or visiting an emergency room, than at any time since the late 1970s. That's the conclusion of a new study from a political think tank in Washington, D.C., funded by Democrats. The middle class is in turmoil, and it was produced by the Center for American Progress and the Service Employees International Union. And it mines data from the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the census records, and other sources to paint a picture of increasing peril for those in the middle 60% of income distribution, that is, in the income range of $18,000 a year to $88,000 a year, and that covers 60% of the people of America. $18,000 to $88,000. Now, despite a growing economy, a rising stock market, and stronger corporate earnings that are helping the rich get richer, the middle class in America is caught in an unprecedented squeeze that makes it increasingly unstable. The financial declines each year since 2001 have been dramatic. Now, income for middle class families has remained stagnant or flat since 2001. And the prices for big ticket items such as housing, health care, college education, and transportation have risen dramatically, leaving families unable to save any money at all. And that's why savings are in the negative column. Not since the Great Depression of the 1930s has the savings rate in America been this low. And middle-class families are borrowing record amounts of money just to pay their monthly bills. Families are being forced to live beyond their means just to pay for the basics, such as housing and health care. Now, so said Christian Weller. Let me write that name down here. Not Christine, now it's Christian. A senior economist for the Center for American Progress, which is headed by John Podesta, a former Clinton administration chief of staff. They're not only spending their current income, but all of their future income. And researchers frame their conclusions in terms of risk. For instance, would you be able to keep your home for 3 months if the family breadwinner became unemployed? Well, just 30% of middle-class families could sustain themselves through a spell of joblessness in 2004, which is the most recent year for data, compared with 40% in 2001. Now, did you get that, boys and girls? If you're in the income level, income bracket, of $18,000 to $88,000 a year, in 2001, 40% of you could have sustained 3 months of joblessness and made your house payments. It's down to 30% today. You've lost 10 percentage points in about 6 years. Now, do you have the cash reserves to pay for a medical emergency? With double-digit increases in health insurance costs for most of this decade, it is no surprise that the number of Americans without health insurance rose by 1.3 million last year. It is now up to 46.6 million people, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The cost of family health insurance is up nearly 90% since 2000. So your health insurance premiums have doubled over the last 6 years. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization. And the study says only 22% of middle-class families could cope with a $3,000 average cost of a small medical emergency, such as treatment for a broken ankle. Now, just picture this. Your kid breaks his arm, has a broken ankle, or something on that order. The average cost of that now is going to be $3,000. Only 22% of middle-class families could cope with that kind of an emergency. That's down from 35% that could handle such an expense in 2001. So you've gone from 35% down to 20%. Do you have 3 months of income put away for a rainy day? Just 3 months. Now that's just 18% of middle-class families. Did you get that? 18% of middle-class families have enough income put away for a rainy day. Those with dual incomes earning from $18,500 to $88,000 in 2004 had accumulated wealth equal to 3 months' worth of income. That's a drop of 30% who had such savings in 2001. 30% of people over the last 6 years have now gone from having a 3 month supply of your regular income. Let's suppose you're making $3,000 a month. You should have $9,000 then, a 3 month supply, a 3 months of income, stashed away someplace. Now, I know somebody's going to write me an email and say, well, why would anybody want to save when the value of the dollar is being inflated out of sight? Well, I agree with you, and I hear you. You know, I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind. But why don't you have 3 months' worth of food in your pantry? Or why don't you have 3 months' worth of payments on your house paid in advance? Or why don't you have some gold or silver tucked away someplace? You ever think about that? I mean, you know, there's other ways to save other than saving dollars in a passbook savings account, you know, at your local bank, which you're losing 10% a year on, granted. But I wanted you to notice here that the middle class, not talking about the wealthy or the poor. See, the poor have it made. All they got to do is go down, pick up their food stamps, or live in their government-subsidized housing. The rich have it made. And they got George Bush and the neocons in the White House giving them tax breaks for the rich. Now, if you're making $100,000 a year or more, you're in the top 5% of income earners in the country. That's the top 5% now. If you're making from about $20,000 to $90,000, you know, in round numbers, 20 to 90, you're in that broad 60% spectrum. 60% of Americans are in that group of people. The majority of Americans are in that group called the middle class. You can be at the low end of the middle class at $20,000 a year, or you can be at the high end of the middle class at $90,000 a year, but that's where you're at. Now, the middle class is being squeezed, and it's not an accident. Not an accident. Now, do you have 3 months of income put away for a rainy day? Well, only 20% of middle-class families can do that. People are incredibly anxious, and families are stressed out. They're seeing too many families passing like ships in the night in the driveway. Now, that's Andy Stern. He's the head of the Service Employees International Union, the largest and fastest-growing union in the United States. The rising tide is not rising all or raising all of the boats, only luxury liners. And it's not building the kind of America that they want, that any of us want. To maintain the day-to-day consumption, Americans are taking on record amounts of consumer debt, and researchers say $5.2 trillion since 2001. In June of 2006, families took on debt equivalent to 129% of their disposable incomes. It's a big increase from 96%. In 2001. So it wasn't good in 2001 because your debt amounted to about 96% of your disposable income. Now, let's suppose you're making $3,000 a month. $2,000 of that is disposable income. That's about $25,000 a year. So you got $25,000 of disposable income. In 2000 or 2001, you had $25,000 in debt and $25,000 in disposable income per year. Now, 6 years later, you're up to 130% of your disposable income. So you got the same $25,000, okay? Times 1.25 says that you now owe $31,250. And you're doing that, and you have been doing that for 6 years. Can you see the ultimate end game from that kind of living, that kind of expense? I mean, you know, you don't have to have an advanced degree in mathematics to figure out that if you people continue to live like that, the ultimate end game is bankruptcy. The ultimate end game is that you're going to lose the equity in your home. You're going to lose that new car that you're driving around in. You're going to lose your standard of living. That's the bottom line. and then you're going to have to start over. It's not necessarily impossible. You know, there's always the day after tomorrow. But what I wanted to point out, wouldn't it be better in life if you could hang on to everything that you've got now? Stop running up any further debt. Pay off the debt that you've accumulated and then go about living your life. Because as we proceed through this series of programs here, I'm going to take a look at some necessities. And the luxury list and the necessity list that's on the average American's mind has had a big change over the last 50 years. A big change. 90% of Americans today believe that an automobile is a necessity. 90% of Americans, 90%, 9 out of 10 of you people listening to me right now, honest to God, believe that an automobile is a necessity. And the average person today is spending $9,000 a year on that car. $9,000 a year for that automobile. Now, you know, I'm from a different era. I can remember as a child growing up, we didn't have a car. So obviously a car was not a necessity. We ate. We had a house to live in. We had food, clothing, and shelter. I never missed a day of food. I never went hungry. Had plenty of clothes. Always had shoes on my feet. But we didn't have a car. We didn't have an iPod. We didn't have a washer or dryer. You know, there's a lot of things that Americans today believe, honest to God believe, when they're polled, what is a luxury and what is a necessity? They, honest to God, believe that an automobile is a necessity and you can't live without one in modern American society. I'll say this and I'll concede straight up that you will not live as well without an automobile. But boys and girls, there was life before automobiles and I would contend that there will be life after automobiles. And if you take a look at the world's population, half the people in the world don't have automobiles. In fact, it's probably more than that. Now, what you may think is a necessity and what you believe we've got to have here in America to make life meaningful and worthwhile and what you could live without and how this debt is going to impact upon you, because the debt is going to impact upon you, it's going to impact upon me. I don't have any debt, and I'm free and clear, and it's going to impact upon me. I'm going to suffer just like all of you debtors out there. Maybe not to the same extent, but it's going to affect me. I don't think I'm going to be devastated by it, but I'm going to be affected by it. And so I've taken precautions and taken plans. Now I'm going to throw out a couple of really crazy ideas here. Let me tell you this. First of all, savings. Remember in the article here it says that Americans virtually have no savings. The savings rate in America today is minus. Minus. It hasn't been minus since 1933. Kids, 1933. Americans aren't saving. Worse, Americans are going further in debt to maintain their living standards. That's understandable. Your wages are not increasing, but your taxes and expenses are. To fill in the gap, you're simply using your credit cards. Okay, but the ultimate end game to that, the ultimate end of that, is that you're going bankrupt and you're going to lose everything that you've got in the final analysis. Well, you know, not everything, but most. That new car you got, it's gone. That house you're living in is gone. Wouldn't you live better if you could make intelligent decisions today to save as much of your assets as possible? You may not save them all, but you ought to save as much as possible. So let me throw out a wild concept. Always save half. America's savings rate back in the 1950s was 10%. Americans, if they were making $3,000 a year, were saving $300 a year. Today, you're saving zero, and you're going into debt. Now, if you save nothing and you don't go into debt, then you're treading water. You're not getting ahead. But if you're not saving, then you're not getting ahead. And in fact, in America, you're not just treading water, you are sinking. you're going under. And every time you add to your debt load, you're getting a little further under the water, just a little further down. So I'd like to suggest that you always save half. Now, you're going to sit there and say, that's crazy, that's preposterous. Well, the lifestyle that you're living, that's true, but, you know, I'm an old man and I always save half. Let me tell you how you do this. An old Portuguese guy told me this story one time. He said, any Portuguese can come here from Portugal and make it big in America, but you Americans, if you went to Portugal where I came from, would starve to death. He told me that when I was 15 years old. I was absolutely shocked. I was appalled. What? We Americans? The wealthiest nation in the world? The smartest people on the planet? The people with atomic bombs? And what in the hell do you Portuguese have? You haven't even got a nuclear weapon. But that old man said, any Portuguese can come to the United States and make it easy. But if you went there, you would starve to death. So he told me, he said, no matter how much money you make, you spend all of it. And I said, yeah, so what's wrong with that? He said, well, you never can get ahead that way. He said, now here I am, a Portuguese immigrant, been here in this country for about 40 years. And take a look at what I've accomplished. I came here with $5 in my pocket and a train ticket from New Bedford, Massachusetts to Lolita, California. That's what I arrived with. Now take a look at what I have. Now I could tell you what he had. 240 acres, 140 cows, 40 heifers, 40 calves, and 600 tons of hay in the barn. And at least, we know he had at least $200,000 cash in the bank of Lolita, because that's what Mary Nelson stole out of his account. So, we know he had some cash, don't we? He got his money back, you know, the bank guaranteed it. But moral to the story is, now how does a man with $5 in his pocket and a ticket start out in 1922? And the year that this occurred was in 1955. So from 22 to 32, 42, 52, in 33 years, end up with more than $1 million. And this is in 1955 dollars. He went from $5 to $1 million in 1955. By today's standard, just multiply that times 10. He went from $5 to $10 million in 33 years. How does a crummy Portuguese immigrant do that? With no education. Never spent a day in school. And all he could write was his name on his checks. He could not even write out the check. He'd have to hand you the checkbook and say, make it up. Then he'd sign it. Now, how in the hell does a man do that? And the answer is, you always save half. And you pay yourself first. So tuck that one away in your hearts. It's always save half. And pay yourself first. And then you live on what's left. Now notice here that the average middle class runs from $20,000 to $90,000 a year. Boys and girls, the guy that's making $90,000 a year spends all of it. And the guy that's making $80,000 spends all of it. The guy that's making $70,000 spends all of it. Now let's try this, always save half. The guy making $90,000 a year and spends all of it, he could live like the man that makes $45,000 a year and save half, couldn't he? And the guy that's making $40,000 a year, he could save half. And he could live like the guy that's making $20,000. And the guy that's making $20,000, he could live like the guy that's making $10,000. Now, by doing that, you save half. And when you save half at the end of 1 year, instead of having nothing, you would have a 1 month, 2 month, 3 month supply of money. You'd have a 6 month, a 1 year, 2 year, a 3 year, 5 year supply of money. Pretty soon, when you've got enough money, you start doing business. You start buying, selling, and trading. And that's where the money's at. The money is in buying, selling, and trading. It's not in employment. It's not in work. It's not in your job. Well, George Bush, you know, in the last election, he said, what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. Okay. Well, now 100 million of you people out there have jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, take a look at where you're at. And then ask yourself, well, do you have a 3-month supply of money? Can you weather a storm for 3 months if you lose your job? And the vast majority of you people can't. And you were born in this country, and most of you people have degrees with letters after your name, and here's this immigrant comes over here with $5 in his pocket, makes the equivalent in today's dollars of $10 million in 33 years. That old man didn't have any debt. He had money. He didn't go to the bank and borrow. He had his own. He was a lender, not a borrower. Now, that's where real wealth comes from, and America is not a nation of real wealth. America is a nation of debt. And I don't count debt as wealth. I see people driving around in BMWs, but they don't own them. I don't have a BMW, but I don't have any debt. And I had to make a choice between debt and a BMW, so I'd drive a GMC. And it's bought and paid for. I own it. And then on top of that, I got a Chevy van, and I bought it and paid for it and I own that. And then I got a pickup, and I bought and paid for that and I own it. I don't have any debt on my automobiles. Don't have any debt on my land. Don't have any debt on my house. Now, I think that everybody in America should be debt-free. I'm kind of a wild fanatic, but I think that life would be better in America if 300 million Americans had 3 months worth of their income saved up with no debt, that you own your house free and clear. I think every American should own his house free and clear, and I can show you how to do that. You can own your house free and clear in 6 years. In fact, the Bible requires that you own your house in 6 years. Did you know that? Pay for it free and clear in 6 years. Now, there's a way to do that, and there are millions of people around the world who have done that. People who have money. You know, the rich people. And here in America, even the wealthy, people, you know, that have incomes in the millions of dollars are poor. Poor. That is, if the economy collapses and their income is shut off, they will lose most, if not everything, that they have. People that live in million-dollar homes have them leveraged out, and they're buying them on time. They do not own them free and clear. People who are wealthy on the exterior, driving around in a Rolls Royce, or maybe two or three. I know a guy one time had three Rolls Royces. And when the recession came on in 79, he lost all three of his Rolls Royces and his houses. He was a real estate broker. So don't think for a minute that it can't happen for you. But as we progress along, I'm going to show you how to own your house free and clear. Own your cars free and clear, and always save half. I know, it's a wild new concept. But if a Portuguese immigrant can do it and make money, real wealth, I contend that you can too, especially if you got a degree after your name. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to close off right here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and how The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember that the law hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and that all of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.